You're listening to the Podcast Detroit Network. Visit www.podcastdetroit.com for more information.
Having a loved one who needs additional care can be both physically and mentally challenging. Knowing what their needs actually are, scheduling staff to come in and out of the home, having to look at them right in the eyes and say, you can no longer take care of yourself. Where can you find the resources you need? Today, our special guest is Michael Flannery of Michigan Geriatric Care Management Services. He's going to give you great insight on how to make this overwhelming task easier for you and your loved one. Hi, this is Rich Sparks, your senior real estate specialist, and this is Baby Boomer University, and class is in session. You know, the other day I was reading an article in the New York Times, and the column header was, "Why Hire a Geriatric Care Manager?" And even though I work in this realm, I wasn't familiar with that term. So according to the author, Jane Gross, during an especially dicey period with her mother, then in an assisted living facility, her and her brother hired a geriatric care manager. First, strictly for a consultation, but she found it so valuable that they end up bringing him on, and he worked for him for quite a while. One of the things she mentions, you know, hey, they're not really rolling in the money, and at first it really felt like an extravagance, but over time they saw the value in this. One of the things she said was, the care manager helped solve a series of complex problems that I doubt I have solved myself. Having that advocate was a crazy blessing. So locally here, we found a top-notch geriatric care manager, Michael Flannery. Michael, thank you for coming on the show.
Well, thank you very much, Rich, and I'm glad to be here.
Awesome. Well, right off the bat, why don't you tell us just a little bit about, first off, what the heck is geriatric care management?
Geriatric care management.
And I'll tell you, doing the intro with the name of your company, I was like,
it's a big mouthful.
It is. About halfway through, I was ready to go. Yeah. So, but tell us a little bit about what exactly is this and then how you got into it.
Well, I have a special definition. If you had a room full of geriatric care management service providers, they'd probably have their all slightly different description of what it is to them. To me, it is a professional person with multiple years of experience in a variety of different subject matters, from anything like financial aid to legal aid to chore providers, experience with Medicaid, Medicare, insurance issues. You want to try to find somebody that has a lot of experience with all those different types of problems, because believe it or not, as you age, you are going to run into multiple problems that you don't know how to solve.
Okay.
So when I started my career, I've been a master's level social worker since 1986. Mm-hmm. Almost immediately, I went into home health care. And I was working with primarily back then, hospitals were pretty much the only players out there that had their own home health care divisions. As the years went forward, there were individuals who opened their own companies. And I called that the golden age of home health care, because Medicare paid for every single visit made to see the patient in the home.
Wow.
That included nurses and social workers and physical and occupational therapists, home health aides, you name it. Every single visit got paid. I remember us having patients that were open for a year at a time, every single day, every single week, for a whole year, 2 years, you name it. And I would guess about 12 years ago or so, I don't exactly remember when Medicare switched over to a new payment system that has greatly reduced the services that they provide in home now.
Yeah, no big surprise there.
No big surprise. Yeah. And now more than ever, if I can add this,
sure,
is, from my opinion, now more than ever, people need to turn to a professional care manager to help them with the multiple problems that they're facing. Mm-hmm. And I'm actually encouraging younger people in their 50s and 60s to start having a consultation with me to start preparing for their own personal issues that are going to come up. And I like to take an HMO approach. Everybody understands that the HMOs are like a wellness. They want to keep an eye on you frequently to evaluate your medical issues and try to cut off problems from getting out of control. And that's how I define me and my services. We like to get in early, start looking at the problems, maybe even before they start developing, and make some recommendations about how to deal with them as that person ages.
Okay.
A lot of our patients, though, are already elderly and they have some extreme problems, and their choices are daunting as far as trying to solve them. Another term I use to describe the company is, and you've already used it, is advocate. We advocate in every way, shape, and form how to solve with the problems for that person. In fact, we become like a family member.
Mm-hmm. It's kind of like, just taking it outside the medical realm, it's almost like anyone can watch HGTV.
Mm-hmm.
Anyone can build their own house.
Mm-hmm.
But we don't tend to do that. We hire a general contractor because there's so many moving parts, so many things, that having that person that has knowledge that can bring it together, that's kind of what you're doing for the elderly, it sounds like.
And their family members.
And their family members.
Yes, yeah. Yes. I don't want to leave out how important my work is for the caregiver. The caregiver is often neglected by everybody, including themselves. And I'll go into a home where the caregiver is typically the wife, mm-hmm. although sometimes it's the husband. And I ask them after I do my initial evaluation about their spouse, and I'll turn to them and I'll say, "When was the last time you saw your doctor?"
Well, that's
a,
not
a long
unusual.
Time. A
that's,
long time,
right? I think it's. National statistics is the caregiver has about a 60-70% chance of passing away before the person they're caring for.
Perfect example.
Yeah.
About 3 months ago, I opened a case on an elderly couple in Canton. They were under an HMO that up until the beginning of this year, I did not have access to, but now I am, and it's a very large one in the area.
Not have access to?
Well, 95% of my services are covered under insurance.
Okay.
So that is a very positive thing, obviously, for
always
the public, yeah. Right?
Sure.
There are certain circumstances where I may have to do work that is not covered under the insurance, and so we will discuss private pay.
Right.
So, and that is sort of growing. I'm having more and more people ask me to do things that are not covered by insurance, and I'll be happy to do that. But mm-hmm. that's under a separate contract for private pay.
Okay.
But this particular HMO in the area brought me in. They had heard about my services, and they were very, very happy. Apparently, had not run into any other provider in the area that was doing what I was doing. And so they gave me a contract. I've been told they have 500,000 insured customers in the area.
Wow.
This family I had been in contact with last fall by a visiting doctor service who I do a lot of work with, and they had asked me to go and try and help this family. Well, when I found out that they had this HMO, and my billing department said, "Well, Mike, we can't. You know, you can't bill on that." And I had to tell the family that, and they, you know, they were not at that time prepared to do any private pay.
Mm-hmm.
So I said, "I'll tell you what, I'm going to be working on trying to get, you know, myself approved." Well, several months ago I did, and they were the very first family that I contacted, and they were super, super happy that I was going to be coming out. Well, I went out there. The wife was very, very ill, not mobile at all. The husband was a primary caregiver. They had already been paying for private duty care to come in, and that's an excellent thing. A lot of people don't do that. Unfortunately, he fell and broke his hip about 2 or 3 weeks after I started. And I typically see my patients once a week or maybe once every 2 weeks, just depending on the situation. And he went in the hospital, and I talked to him several times while I was in there. And unfortunately, about 3 weeks ago, he passed. And now the wife is, you know, she doesn't, she's in shock. Let's put it that way.
Right.
And the daughter, it lives fairly far away. I've been in contact with them a couple times, and they're just going through the grieving process. I'm sure that I'll be back out there soon to try and take it to the next level.
Wow. So. And just with the aging population we're having, what kind of, I mean, realistically, I think in the next decade, we're going to be hearing in the news where it's almost like a national emergency.
It's a national security problem that seems to be being neglected by everybody. I don't think the government appears to have much of a plan about how to help the elderly. And I think we're at the level now about one-third of the population, not only in the United States, but the entire world.
Well, that's why China lifted their ban on only one child, because they're – youth to elder ratio was so off, they didn't have enough workers.
Right.
It wasn't being benevolent. Have more kids. It was like, oh, we need more workers, produce.
What an interesting place to be, because they, I believe, practiced infanticide. Some other way, they highly prize males in the society.
Oh, sure.
There's about 300 million unmarried males in China that may never be able to have a family because they just can't find a woman to get married with. So,
well, that's a very frustrating thing, more so for them than me.
Yes.
but what are you going to do about that?
Exactly.
So going back, just trying to get a general idea, because absolutely there's going to be a higher need. First off, give us just a kind of a bird's eye view on the 4 or 5 key things that you would normally do for a family.
The first and most important of all is to go in on the first visit and do a very thorough evaluation, everything from A to Z. Mm-hmm. We look at the financial situation. Do they have assets? What's their income? They have debts.
And what would be the purpose of that?
That's to determine whether or not they'll qualify for government assistance.
Okay.
And we can talk about Medicare. We can talk about Medicaid. We can talk about the VA. They all have their rules and regulations.
Absolutely.
And guidelines about who qualifies financially. So the financial one is huge.
Absolutely.
Another one is legal. A lot of people do not have a legal representative should they become ill. A medical power of attorney, durable power of attorney. I run into a lot of situations where my patients are mentally no longer able to manage their own affairs, and we need to start talking about a guardian and a conservator. And sometimes it's a good idea to have family do that, and sometimes not so good of an idea.
Oh, for sure. And I'll just put this out there for everyone. If you do not have those items, which national statistics, yes, on a trust base, less than 20% of all U.S. citizens have a trust. Out of that 20%, less than 11% actually funded it. So they're meaningless. But if you just need basic docs, reach out. Send me an email, rich@richsparks.com. I will send you basic forms. I am not an attorney. I would suggest getting an attorney. But those few items that Michael just talked about, you got to have. You have to have.
Yeah.
It's not fair to the people around you by you not getting prepared. Wouldn't you agree?
Absolutely. 100%. Yeah.
Okay, so the first one where Michael's going to come in, he's checking out finances to see if you qualify for various programs. Secondly, you're looking at, okay, what type of legal documents and preparations do you have in place?
Mm-hmm.
And I'll give you an example. We had, just like this, though, we had an individual who we were in the process of almost closing their home. they had a power of attorney for their daughter, and then her health turned, and she didn't think she was going to live until the closing. Well, that power of attorney, upon mom passing away, becomes null and void. Power of attorney is only good for a living.
Mm-hmm.
This would have then put that property into probate without a will, which is a long process for the daughter, the son, and I think there were some grandkids involved. Mom made it 4 or 5 days past closing. But if she wouldn't have done that, just because they didn't have a few things, whether it was a ladybird deed or whatnot, mm-hmm. in place, mm-hmm. just by not having those few things, oh my gosh, what a burden being placed upon the survivors.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Okay, so we're past the medical, we're past financial. What's the other next thing you look at?
And I'm not going to rank these, but
no, no.
But medical is way at the top. I need to know what your medical problems are. And once again, I have a huge caseload where they're elderly and they've got a lot of serious health problems,
sure.
already. So we have to look at the health problems. And there are a lot of people at home living alone, and they're not paying attention to their medical problems. And I'll throw in that the main medical problem, as I see it, is depression.
Oh, isolation, depression, huge.
I can't tell you. I would just estimate that 90% plus of every single patient I've ever seen at home has some level of depression or anxiety.
Wow.
And it hasn't been properly diagnosed. It hasn't been properly treated. A lot of times a primary care doctor will issue a script for Xanax or whatever, and then they don't ask any more questions about it. I have a very strong opinion and about this, and I encourage all my patients that if you're depressed, if you have never been to a psychiatrist, you need to go have an evaluation. Get the proper medication. Try it out for a while. A lot of mental health issues are made better with medication, but I also want them to be under the care of a psychotherapist,
mm-hmm.
to get down at the nitty gritty stuff. And a lot of people are not used to that. They'll complain, oh, I went to see my psychiatrist and all he did was give me medicine. He didn't listen to my problems. Well, a lot of them don't do actual psychotherapy. So if I'm involved with you, I'm going to encourage you to do both. When you start feeling better, then you will start paying more attention to your other medical problems.
Well, and that stems a lot for that isolation, lack of movement, mm-hmm. lack of proper nutrition has a physical and mental effect on people.
Mm-hmm.
So, okay, so beyond depression when it comes to the medical side, you're looking at what ways?
Diabetes is horrible.
Yeah. Have you seen? Now, you've been in this a long time. What's the rise on diabetes you've seen?
Oh, it's just skyrocketing. One third of my caseload is diabetic.
Wow. Now, a decade ago, was it the same or do you think it's increased?
No, it was lower.
Was it?
Yeah, it's increased.
Okay.
It's increased. As the population's got older, it's also put a bigger strain on the medical profession. I'm one of the first things I do in my eval is if I've got to know who the primary care doctor is,
mm-hmm.
but I encourage my patients to have a visiting doctor come once a month. A lot of them, it's very difficult for them to get out to see their primary care doctor.
Sure.
So I see the visiting doctor as a fantastic tool to help me keep them well. And the visiting doctor can usually respond quicker and writing orders for medical equipment and changes in prescription drugs, those sort of things. But I still want them to have that connection with their primary care doctor. Big reason why, most visiting doctors don't have hospital privileges.
Right.
So if you go in, they're not going to follow you. Your primary care doctor can go in and follow you. So I really, really ask them to do both. Sometimes initially they're resistant to that, but eventually most of them come around and see the benefit. And another thing too, about the visiting doctor, I want you to get to know and have a relationship with that person. if you wait and have a major emergency and then we got to bring one in, you know what? Things may not flow as well as they should. And so I really think that's a necessity. Podiatrists come to the home.
Oh, yeah.
The feet. If you can't be mobile, we got big problems. So let's get the podiatrist in there. You look for the funguses and infections and try and keep you
even
on your
feet. Clipping the toenails properly.
Yes. Yeah.
Now, do they normally give you permission or, you know, for you to talk directly to their doctors?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Have to have it. I'm going to interrupt you. When I go out and do that EVL, they all sign a HIPAA.
Okay.
So the HIPAA gives me legal permission to discuss any type of problem I need to with whoever I have to. And mainly it's their primary care doctor.
So right there, I mean, that's just a huge value. I know like in my family, it's probably the same in most folks' family. I take care of more of the business side. My wife handles the medical. Mm-hmm. When I go to the doctor, she's like, well, I'm coming with you because you won't ask the right questions. And I'm like, I'm fine. And then when I come back, she goes, did you ask this, and this? No, but he really enjoyed the Tigers game, you know. So it's kind of like you being with the knowledge you have and being in that, the communication levels just have to skyrocket after you're involved.
Oh, you should see the paperwork. The paperwork. And what's exciting for me and my company in the last year is I used to be the sole employee up until about a year ago. And now because of the increased workload, which I am so happy about, I have 6 social workers now.
Nice.
And I am going to teach them everything I possibly can so they can be another Mike Flannery or better.
There you go. Now, going back to the doctors, though, I had one more question with that. Do you ever get resistance from the I take the smile as, oh, yeah. You get some resistance from the original doctors. And when that happens, how do you handle that?
I guess the main thing I would just reinforce with them is that I'm seeing what's happening in the home and they're not.
Sure.
I think a lot of times the primary care doctors, they're fantastic, but a lot of times I think they're treating symptoms of underlying problems that exist at a home. And because they don't realize it and because of the insurance, they don't get to spend much time talking to the patient.
For sure.
If I'm involved with them and the patient asks me to talk to them, they will talk to me. But I get a lot of resistance in things like contacting them and asking for like a home health care order or getting a durable medical equipment order.
Is what?
That would be like a wheelchair, walker, cane, hospital bed. It's become more and more difficult because of insurance reasons to get this equipment. But if we're going to help, there is a Medicare shift in focus now towards the home.
Okay.
And we could spend an entire show talking about that. But I have been begging for years, why can't we put more money into home care and less perhaps into nursing home? Okay. Mm-hmm. I'll take a wild guess that's not so wild, that it probably costs about $100,000 plus a year to put a person in a nursing home. So they're going to take – if you're low income and you're getting $1,000 a month,
right,
they're going to take that – if you have to go live in a nursing home, they're going to take that $1,000 from you.
Mm-hmm.
They're going to give you $60 a month, I believe.
That's
to
your
spend,
allowance,
right?
Yep, it's $60.
And then who picks up the rest of the tab? Medicaid. And Medicaid is us, the taxpayer.
Yep. Or if you have any assets whatsoever, they will be consumed.
Yes. And quickly.
Yes.
Now you think $100,000 is a lot? It's not.
No. You'll blaze through that quick.
Right.
So it sounds like you have, when someone is in need of those items, whether it's a walker, a medical bed, things of that nature, you probably have a lot better shot of getting it done and getting it in the home versus a family trying to do it on their own, I would imagine.
You're pretty accurate about that.
Okay.
I've learned to persevere.
The squeaky wheel syndrome?
Yeah. I remember when I went to U of M, I was in the psych honors program and was planning to go on and get become an MD. And was wondering how I was going to pay for it and this and that. Well, I had a fantastic professor, Dr. Paula Collins, who had a doctorate in social work.
Okay.
And I never thought about it before.
Right.
And so I was in the psych honors program, and she was one of the professors that oversaw that program. And she also taught a class at U of M Dearborn in social work. And so she just got a hold of me and wouldn't give up. And she says, you know, you've got to go get an MSW. You'll be able to practice almost immediately after graduation. If you go the PhD psychology route, it's going to be 10 years before you really get anywhere. And I listened to her.
Okay.
And I had been working on the line at General Motors, and it took me 10 years from start to finish to get both my bachelor's and my master's degree. We were talking earlier before the show about being blue collar.
Right.
And in my family has always pretty much for the last 100 years worked at one of the auto companies. My dad was a GM, a toolmaker, and my grandfather worked at the Rouge, and you name it. We're all there. And I had saved money in high school enough to get me through the first year at U of M Dearborn, and then I ran out. Well, back then, my family didn't have money to help
right.
me pay.
Right, no, I can appreciate
so,
it.
So a little side story, my friend's father was a general foreman out at Hydromatic and Ypsilanti, GM Transmission, and they were hiring, and he says, I'll go work there for 3 months. Now, this is 1977. And I said, okay. He said, yeah, save some money and then go back. It was in the summertime towards the end. So I did it. I saved $5,000 in 3 months because I took every single hour. That was a lot of money
right.
back then.
Oh, yeah.
And so I said, okay, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to stay here and work during the day, and I'll take two classes a night. And before I knew it, that stretched out for years. But you know what? It also let me see an important part of the world that I would not have seen.
Sure. And I imagine you came out with very little to no debt.
Yeah. When I started there, GM UAW would only pay classes that were auto related. By the time I left, they didn't have that rule anymore.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah. So, yeah. So I didn't have any debt. And by the way, my daughter just graduated from MSU with no debt.
Beautiful. Beautiful.
We got her into Met. So your listeners out there, fund your kids college. You know, big help. But also, let them work.
Oh, I
yeah,
totally
gotta work.
Agree. Totally
gotta
work. Agree.
Yeah.
It builds you. That's what I've, you know, we were talking about that before, that my kids are kind of boof because I keep telling them, yeah, your dad had the WORK scholarship fund.
I had that too.
You know? It's yeah. like so.
Yeah.
Yes, Johnny, yeah. you can work and yeah. go to school.
Right.
But getting back to this great stuff, what would you say an adult child, let's say in Missouri, and you have an old high school friend, and he said, Michael, what's the three signs that I should be looking for? And when I see them in my adult parent, I know I need to reach out to someone like yourself.
Let me rephrase what I think you just said. So there's a person living out, adult child living out of state has a...
Oh, there are parents out there, so you can't go see them.
Oh, they're out there.
Yeah.
Oh, I can't.
You can't go see them. They're too far away.
But I'm making a recommendation to them about what they should look for.
Yes.
Oh, go to my website. Go to my website. Look, it's www.mgcms.com. And I have lots of examples of how I've helped people, scenarios that you're talking about right now. To try to maybe zero in on that, let's say they're in Missouri and their mom and dad lives, 5 miles away, and they go over there and they notice that the pill box that they fill up for them, the pills are still in there.
Okay.
And it was a week ago.
So they're not taking their meds properly.
They're not taking their meds properly.
Okay.
Mail's piling up. If the mail's piling up, there's a good chance that the bills aren't being paid. I have literally seen where that got out of control and homes went into foreclosure.
Actually, you have that story online.
Yeah.
Yeah, I read that.
Yeah. Yeah, I've had that. I'll talk a little bit about my my own parents. I won't give you the full story. But towards the end of their life, they died almost 9 years ago, within about three or four months of one another. My mother was the primary caregiver. My father had been, he was a Korean War vet. He had been diagnosed with lung cancer. And we came together as a family to try and figure out, oh my God, you know, what we should do, you know?
Sure.
And we're going to bring in private duty caregivers and all that, maybe move them to one of our houses. I have a younger sister and me, and that was the only children in the family. Before we actually, got to make a decision about that, my mother died of an aneurysm.
Mm.
One of the bad things, I mean, that's bad enough, dying of an aneurysm, but she went fast. But my mother was also one of the worst hoarders I ever saw. And I
we could show you some. Give her a run for the money.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And I went in there the day that she passed, and I went into the house, and my father had been admitted the day before because he hadn't been eating for about a week. So he was at Henry Ford. She died at Oakwood. I go in the house at 5 o'clock in the morning. I hadn't been there in a while, and I'm just looking around, and the bills and the bills and the bills. And come to find out, you know, they had not been keeping up with everything. They knew, and this is, I think about that situation because I offered to do certain things and they would not let me do it. And that is probably what a lot of people out there, adult children, are going to run into. You're going to see these things. You're going to bring it up to them, and they're not going to want to do it. That's a good reason to suggest the healthcare manager come in.
Right?
It's a totally different story when I walk in that door.
Oh, yeah.
They will tell me.
It's amazing, isn't it?
It is.
You get, even when we walk in, when we have one of our downsizing coaches come in with telling them the exact same thing their adult children have been saying. They go, oh, but little side note, if you get into that situation where they haven't been paying those bills and they're going through that foreclosure process, we've helped a tremendous amount of people in that situation. But if they wait too late, must have been 9 months ago, I had someone call, exact same scenario you're talking about. When I pulled to find out when the sheriff's auction had happened, because I only have 6 months.
Right.
That's it. They called me 5 months, 3 weeks, and 2 days. Gone. And I literally had to say, I might be able to get in. Actually, we were able to, but I was able to get an investor in, purchase it at a discount. I could have done much better for them, but they were able to get about 20, 30 grand out of it. Before everything was lost.
So you saved them that amount of money.
Yeah.
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 And if you hadn't been there, they would have lost it all, right?
If they would have called me, because I mean, I have great relationships with title companies. Title was done in 3 days. I was able to find a cash investor that had liquid assets and make all this happen so they could get a chunk of money out. If they have called me 24 hours later, there is absolutely, and I was shocked that that came together that fast. I really was. That's not a norm.
Well, I'm glad you brought that up because that is such an important part. What you do is so important to the elder care, elder community. I also have a background in rental properties and building.
Yeah.
And when I was married, my ex-wife was also a social worker when we got married. And social workers, historically speaking, don't make a lot of money. So, but we were older. And in our 30s, and I suggested that we start a rental property business. And so we did. And then after a couple of years, I said, you know what, I want to get a builder's license. And I did that, and I started building some houses. And my point being is that experience of being a landlord for the last 20 years and a builder has really added a lot to my professional career as a social worker and healthcare manager. And
well, you can help determine if the environment's even safe.
Right.
So many people are not in a safe and health conducive environment. It's insane.
Part of my initial evaluation is to walk around the house. And I'm looking.
Yeah, we kind of got off. So that would be number four.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. I walk around the house to look for safety issues.
Nice.
Oh, my God. So many people do not have fire extinguishers. So many people don't have working smoke detectors. CO2, they don't know what it means.
Or they put
carbon
it on
monoxide.
The
yeah, right. And so we have a discussion about that. And,
okay.
And I go, look, you remember Costco? Oh, yeah. My kid goes, okay, they got two packs. Go get them. You know?
Right.
Trip hazards. How many patients have I had fall on a rug? Get rid of the rug. Mm-hmm. Tear up the old
yes.
rug. Go with the hard floor. Easy to clean. Don't go down the stairs. You got your washer and dryer in the basement, and you want to live alone, relocate it to the first floor.
Yep.
Oh, it's going to ruin my house. No, what do you care? You want to live here until you die, right?
Yeah, we actually have a guy, if someone needs that. But they just put it in one of the bedroom closets
yes.
upstairs.
Yes.
They're literally drilling
yes.
three holes
yes.
through the floor. It can totally be removed.
Right. Exactly. Easy fix when they decide to move or they die and the house gets sold. Very easy.
Yep.
But they have a better quality of life because now
absolutely.
They can still do their laundry and they don't have to hire somebody.
Right.
Right? So that is another major, major thing about why people out here should call me and ask for an evaluation. My other primary goal is to keep your costs down.
Okay.
Make sure you have enough money and stretch it out to last as long as you live. I will do my darndest to try and make that happen for you. Another thing is I won't say that I'm an expert at Medicaid, but I'm darn close to it. I have a lot of patients that are on Medicaid and or should be on Medicaid.
Right.
And the Medicaid system, Department of Human Services system in Michigan, there's been a lot of changes. And
okay.
they are not communicating with their customers very well anymore. And I pride myself in the fact that my company and my social workers will take on the advocacy role of making sure that they get on Medicaid and they stay on Medicaid. And we actually sign the documents with the permission of our patient that we are the personal representative for them.
Okay.
And when when that is registered with Department of Human Services on their Medicaid case, I'm gonna tell you, I think it reduces a lot of problems. They're not ignored anymore.
Right. Now, here's something. I got a quick question. Can you be on Medicaid and live at home?
Absolutely.
Absolutely.
If you're low income, you want it. You want to be on Medicaid. Here's the big reasons why. Medicaid, if you qualify, is going to help pay the your medical expenses, your unpaid medical bills.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. You're going to get some food stamps. Okay. If you qualify, you'll get what's called adult services, and that's where the state will pay for a chore provider. It can be a family member, a friend, or another person, a professional company. They will not pay spouses. Okay.
Let's touch on that for a second.
Mm-hmm.
If you are the spouse too, so people are kind of like a bucket, right? A bucket only has so much capacity.
Right.
If you're spending all of your time doing the caregiving, you will empty your bucket and you will not, in my opinion, have the wherewithal to spend the emotional quality time that spouse truly needs also.
Yes. Very good point.
Wouldn't you agree?
Yes.
Yeah.
So your question was, making a comment? Or?
Yeah, just making a comment that having, even though to be able to get on Medicaid and to have someone come in and give you as the spouse that break, that's just as beneficial to you as it is to the person receiving the service.
So typically if I'm going in to see a couple and, I'm doing the eval on the husband or wife, whoever it is.
Right.
And when I'm finished, I will turn to the spouse and I will say, and what is your situation? You just heard what I had to say.
Nice. Nice.
I go, what's going on with you? When was the last time you saw your doctor? And they start crying.
Really?
Yeah, they start crying. And I open the case on them. And they're so happy.
Yeah, it's – hey, you got this sense of duty. Here's this person. Even like I've told adult children, you got this person that you're helping your mom, your dad. They were always the protectorate. They were the strong ones. And now you're in that situation with them.
Perfect example. Yesterday, I got a call to go out and do an evaluation for a patient, very serious health problems since birth, in his 50s. No, I'm sorry, early 60s. So I go there, and he's living there with his two sisters, and they're elderly. And I knew when I walked in the door that they were going to be my patients too.
Okay.
And so we're talking, I do the eval, and they start asking me questions about their situation. And I said, I hear you. I said, he's number one. Let's get him out of the way. And what initially should have been a 45-minute visit was almost a three-hour visit.
Wow.
And this happens more and more and more. And these two sisters of his who are in their late 70s, actually, very, very poor, very low income, not getting adequate medical care.
Sure.
And I said, let me get you set up with the visiting doctor who's coming out to see your brother. How simple. And
nice.
Once a month when he checks him out, he's going to check you out too. Okay. Very heart rate, blood pressure, go over your meds and all that. And I give this spiel about the HMO wellness approach. This is how we're going to try and keep the two of you healthy.
Right.
Okay. And one smokes. And I go, are you smoking in the house? Yeah. Everybody's smoking then. You got to stop. I want to stop. What should I do? I go, I'm going to get you hooked up with a smoking cessation class. We're going to get the doctor to write the script for the patch or whatever it takes. Okay. I'm an ex-smoker 35 years ago, you know. But oh my God, smoking. So many people still smoke.
Oh yeah.
You know? So we're looking at every single thing to try to improve that person's life. And I kind of look at it as myself being a jack of all trades, but I'm a jack of all trades with a lot of experience in all those different areas. So,
well, it's like anything. I use this example for our business. It's like going to a mechanic, but bringing your own mechanic along. It's you're going to get much better insight. It's just the way it is. Now, so that when you first schedule up that initial visit and head out there, what type of cost is involved, or how, like, if someone is thinking, by golly, I was just listening to this podcast, I'd love to get Michael out to visit Dad. You know, there's a couple of those signs that we've talked about. How would they go about it, and how does that work?
Well, when I'm talking initially on the phone with them, I explain to them that most of my services should be covered under their insurance.
Okay.
So I will get the demographic information and their insurance information before I even come out there. I turn that over to my billing department. They research the insurance, and they tell me I'm good to go.
Nice.
If I'm not good to go, I'm going to tell them that, and I'm going to say, right now, you might have to go private pay with me. If I can figure out how to, later on down the road, get access to other resources that would pay for my services,
sure,
maybe you need to change your insurance. I still keep telling everybody, Medicare is the Cadillac.
Really?
Medicare is the Cadillac, and try to stay with the Medicare. One big reason is that you have full control over which providers you see.
Okay.
When you're with an HMO, although there are some HMOs that I would also recommend, and sometimes you can have a combination of both. Okay, and you can have Medicare and Medicaid. A lot of people think, I can't have both. Oh no, that's not true. You get a most of my Medicare patients, I try to get them on Medicaid to cover those copays. One thing I want to throw out there to the audience that might be listening who have some knowledge about Medicaid. As your income rises and you're applying for Medicaid benefits, and I'm going to use this number, $700 a month. Let's say your income $700 a month, and you apply to Medicaid. You're probably going to get your full Medicaid benefits without what they call the spend down. Have you ever heard the term spend down?
Okay. I have.
You have. But maybe a lot of people in the audience don't know about it, or they're unsure about what it means. So that spend down, Department of Human Services / Medicaid developed years ago to give people with a higher income amount, monthly income amount, access to Medicaid benefits under certain circumstances. But what happens a lot now and for the 4 or 5 years, if not longer, caseworkers are not fully explaining what that spend down means. And in fact, I've had many people say, my caseworker told me that I have a $500 spend down and I have to spend that money every month and prove it to them before I can get Medicaid benefits. And they say, if I had $500, I wouldn't be applying for Medicaid. That is not how the spend down works. The spend down, let's say it is $500. What they're telling you, what the state is telling you, is that you have to have incurred the expenses every month. And then you have to turn that into your caseworker. And that caseworker processes that information, and then you have your open Medicaid case, which means you're not paying a copay, you're going to get your food stamps, and you're going to get your adult service provider, okay? Now, if you don't send that proof until the end of the month, let's say you send it in on April 25th or 6th, your caseworker gets it, they're not going to process it right away. It might take a day or two before they process. Now you're down to April 28th. It's only good for that month. So you want to send in those bills to them at the beginning of the month right away.
So it's almost, because I know I've done this in the past with my bills, because I like paying bills once a month, period.
Me
and
too.
I have literally called companies and said, stop billing me on the 15th. I want it on the 1st so I can bill with everything else pay it. And every one of them complied. So that's something someone could do to get those bills on the 1st and maximize that month,
right?
It sounds like.
Right. And we also talk about a lot of patients because of memory loss. Let's have somebody monitoring your bills and doing them online or having them deducted right from your bank account.
Sure.
So you don't have to worry about it. I've been doing that for 15, 20 years. I couldn't keep up with all of them, especially with my rental business and all that stuff. So it's all automatically deducted from my account. And I'm proud to say that I paid off every credit card bill for 40 years.
There you go.
On time.
There you go.
On time.
Hey, that's the one. I don't care if you like technology or not. Paying bills online, I love. You know. So we're actually kind of wrapping up here.
Okay.
But I wanted to.
I was hoping you were going to ask me about the vets.
We can talk about vets. We talk about vets a lot on this show.
Well, I love vets, and I love the spouses of vets because they've sacrificed for their country, and among other things. And my father and my uncle, who are both deceased, were Korean War vets. There are a lot of vets out in our community who are not getting the help that they deserve. And I want you to know out there that if you're a vet or you have a family member that is, and you want to call me to try and get you some help, I will definitely do that for you. A lot of vets, they just, you know, they're tough guys, and they don't like asking for help, but they deserve it. So I want to make sure that they get it.
And a lot of them, we've helped a tremendous amount of people get VA benefits over the years, and it can really be a life changer.
It sure can.
Yeah. So one more question here I want to ask you. We're going back to your buddy in Missouri that you really got to start sending him Christmas cards, okay? He's getting a little, you know. Now he says, you know what, Michael, I totally agree with you. I need a geriatric care manager. I'm going to go find one. What three questions should I ask?
How much experience they have.
Okay.
Okay. Was their education specifically in those areas, medical, financial, legal? I'm biased towards social workers. Okay. A social worker with 15, 20 years experience doing care management. My career has gone way beyond just social work. Social workers are super, super important. We need them. We would have a lot of problems in this country if we did not have social workers helping. But my career and my experience has taken me over into the realm of what I call healthcare management. And tying all these things together that we've been talking about, that's what I call healthcare management. We're looking at everything from A to Z. Your typical right. home care social worker works for a home healthcare company and they get one lousy visit. They can't do anything in one visit. And that when we made this big change years ago in Medicare and I saw overnight my caseload drop to zero, I had an epiphany, and the epiphany was that the patient and the family controls what medical provider comes into the house. That's when I formed my company. And ever since then, I've been trying to educate people that they have the right to a social worker. And so I would tell that person out there, you look for somebody that's got my kind of training and Google it.
Well, it sounds like look
Google
for someone.
See what happens. You know?
Look for someone who's an independent, not
right.
necessarily
independent. Yes, yeah, that would be a lot better. I think I've been in an independent, basically my entire career, and I think you'll maybe get a lot more out of it. And once again, I want to. I don't think I pointed this out, but I have what's an MPI number, and that's a National Provider ID number, which allows me to bill insurance directly. I don't need an order from anybody. All I need is you to give me permission to open up a counseling case on you. Okay?
So that might be another good question to ask. Do you have your own, what was it?
MPI number.
MPI number.
Yeah, and they should be insured.
Okay.
Malpractice insurance and all that good stuff. And
all right.
It's helpful to have a background, maybe NASW membership, National Association of Social Workers, some kind of a background and that they're doing their CEs, you got to go every year for so many education credits.
So Michael, tell us when they 90 days from now, they're going to meet someone and say, you need to get a hold of Michael Flannery.
Mm-hmm.
What's the best way for them to get a hold of you?
My cell phone.
Okay.
My cell phone, which is 313-231-0008. My email is michael, a second L. Don't forget the second L. FlannerySW, MikeSamWalter@gmail.com. And I usually return phone calls in 10 minutes or less.
Awesome. Well, we appreciate you coming on. Great information. And that is Michael Flannery of the Michigan Geriatric Care Management Services. is a mouthful.
Thank you very much for having me here.
No worries. We'll do it again. We have a lot more to talk about.
Super.
And class is dismissed.